So let's start with the slide that we had last time. We were talking about the basics of the first compiling phase, which was the scanner. And the purpose of the scanner was to break up the large source input file into smaller tokens, which were the units of meaning for the whole compiler. And the idea was not to code the whole thing manually, but instead come up with a design for a program that generates the scanner component from a very concise and expressive input format. And we decided that the desired input format for our tokens would be to define regular expressions for each of the token classes, and then have the scanner component generate a finite automaton for each of these regular expressions, because finite automata are things that are defined as just a kind of transition, which is a table where you have to look up your current state. You can do that in a kind of numeric format and determine your next state via table lookup, and in the very end, just check whether the state number you're in is actually a finite, a final state, meaning that the automaton accepts the input that we have presented. So this would be the idea for the whole thing that we are doing right now. In order to achieve that, we were talking about the way to generate a nice automaton from a regular expression. And this was the kind of graphical way to do that, that you should... How many of you have never seen a construction like this? I guess it has been part of the lecture for theoretical computers. Okay, yeah. Okay, so this is your common way of doing that. It should give you an intuition of what you can achieve. However, what we will be talking about is an alternative construction that has some nice properties, because it gives you out of the box exactly n plus 1 states, and not just O of n states. Also, it gets rid of all the non-deterministic epsilon transitions that are still in the construction that you've seen before, which kind of connect all these smaller automata that are part of the construction scheme. And what is also nice is that this approach that we see here is something that you can see as a specialization of a system that we will be talking about later on, which is attribute grammars. So you'll need to get to know these kind of algorithms anyway, and this is kind of an example for something that we're going to talk about in a more general way later on. So the attribute grammars are something that we can practice on with this algorithm. These nice chaps that you see over here, Jira Berry and Ravi Sethi, are the two guys that are associated with this approach, at least in the Western world. But nowadays, since the Iron Curtain is no more, and we get to see a little bit more of the scientific world, and probably also in a more neutral way, it actually turns out that most of the people agree that this Viktor Glushkov is the one that can be associated more with being the first one to apply this construction. Yes, so that's also a very famous person in terms of computer science, more to the Eastern development branch of computer science, but as a major researcher in this, such is probably a nice person to know. Okay, so Anyway, what is this whole approach about? The idea is now that we kind of try to come up with a clean start from zero, so to say, to this whole automaton construction. And the idea is to use the to kind of try to observe how the different parts in such a regular expression actually interact with reading in some particular input and try to sketch the whole thing and let's look whether that gives us new insights into how the whole system works before we start with another automaton idea. So the first thing that I should mention, because it is now used a lot, is this concept of a marker, which for which we just use boldface dot in our or bullet in our diagrams. And this is a marker that has a certain semantics, which we are going to see in this example. So at first, let's take an example, a regular expression we are interested in, which is which you'll find on this side. And we've also talked about that we will be having a view on these regular expressions in terms of their syntactic structure, which we can see in this syntax diagram over here. This one. So this is the same regular expression. So we can now remove the regular expression and present an example input. So this is an input for which we want to just check how these parts of the regular expression actually interact while reading in this input. And we do so by marking the parts of the syntax diagram that actually are still have to be used in order to recognize the whole thing, to read in the whole input, or parts that have already been used for input and cannot be used anymore because they have already matched some parts of the whole thing. In order to do so, we will, when we have some state, we will place the marker on the left-hand side when we still have to use this subtree spanned with this root. So when we still have to use the reading states that are children of this state, we will have place a marker to the left of the state. And when we have actually matched things with the leaves from this subtree and have completely worked on all these states, we will go back up and place a marker on the right-hand side of this node. So let's do that for that example. So which would you say is the first part of the input that the first part of the syntax tree that interacts with the input in this example? So at first, yes.
The root of the tree.
So we have to use the whole tree. So the root of the tree is definitely involved. In which way? It's still
on the left-hand side because we haven't used it yet.
So we still need to use it. So we start with a marker on the left-hand side. So now with the current state, can we say anything more? Anything more detailed about probably the other parts of the syntax tree? Maybe parts that are connected to the root? And we can go down a little bit and, for example, have a look at the children to the left. So, with a little bit of insight into our regular expression, we see that we have to read a lot of B's over here. And the right branch only has potentially one B to offer to read, so we should probably go down there. So this part will probably be involved in this for this input. Also, this part will probably be involved, and probably this B is the one that is actually responsible for reading in the first character. So this is a kind of a path that we went through the syntax tree, which we can just slowly connect with each other. And now let's have a look at what happens when we actually consume a kind of input, still keeping the history of the path that we have gone down so far. So let's see, when we read in such a B, we will have to move the marker from the left-hand side to the right-hand side. Then we can remove the B. So that's what we're going to do here. And we will actually, after that, we can go back up and have used up the sub-expression for the OR subtree and are now right there. So after that, we can now decide whether we will claim the first subtree as being finished or whether we still need to match something with a regular expression that we have already visited, because the star means kind of a repetition. You see that the whole system that we're going through now is kind of non-deterministic, but with a little bit of magical insight here in the planning phase, we can kind of try to trace the whole way through the whole system. And yeah, we will know that the first A that we we will have to match one A at some point, which would be this A. So we are probably still on the left part of the branch. So we will go down once again through the whole system before we can. So we will connect over here, go back down, consume another B, which will then disappear from over here before we actually consider this part of the tree as finished. Okay, so now what the rest of the way that we will take is probably, let's try to go over there and match with this subtree once. This will lead us to here before we can match with an A, which we can then remove from this side. So we go over there and match with the A. So there's still one A left. And this A, well, for this concatenation subtree, we will have to match with this part of the subtree at least once. So now that we still have one A to go, we should probably use that opportunity to go over here and consume this A. So now that there's nothing left, we luckily also ran out of subtrees, and we can go back up here and mark the whole subtree as being matched. Okay. So this is one path that can be taken through the whole syntax tree. However, there are a lot of other opportunities to connect dots somewhere and also to not to succeed with that particular input. But this is just one solution. This is something that already smells some kind of non-deterministic. So this could be already a way to come up with a non-deterministic way of going through this whole system. And also now we should probably see that using these small bullets is something that already reminds us of nodes that we know from graphs that might remind us of automata. So now, having a look at this more closely, one could imagine that it would be probably a nice idea to try to come up with all possible ways that we can go through this regular expression in order to match with our input symbols and connect with deterministic or non-deterministic transitions between all these possibilities. And in case that we provide the outcoming automaton with a valid input, the whole system should probably have one way of going through all the transitions that actually matches the input. So that would be the design idea for the whole automaton. Is that something that sounded plausible for you? Because we were going to do right this approach now, but a little bit more formally than this kind of motivation or intuition behind the whole thing. Okay, so just to repeat once again, very shortly, the idea is to design a graph that can be gone in order to pass all the inputs in a way that is actually feasible considering the underlying syntax tree for the regular expression. And use this trace as the accepting input for our automaton. So, what we should have observed so far are the following properties. What we've seen is that input is only removed whenever we have reached with our path through the whole system at the leaf level. So input is consumed at leaves. This is the first thing that we've seen. Apart from that, all the other transitions didn't consume any input. So the only possibilities for these, the only valid labels for these transitions are actual epsilon labels. So these are epsilon transitions. Yeah, with that, we can try to construct our automaton for a specific regular expression. Note that this is, of course, something that is highly dependent on the regular expression that is actually used, so we should kind of come up with a generic scheme that we can use for any regular expression that we are presented with. And in order to do so, we need to somehow denote that we want to address an aspect of a certain node. So we need kind of a name for particular nodes. So far, we had the nodes labeled with just their operator. For example, the concatenation. But as you already see, there are several concatenation nodes out there, so that's probably not enough for a unique naming scheme. So now is the question, what could we actually use as a unique naming scheme? So if just the operator is not enough, we should probably also take their parameters in our naming scheme. But that's also slightly problematic. Consider this subtree here. If we take as a name for the root node for this subtree, if we take A pipe B as a name, then we cannot differentiate between this subtree and this subtree over here. That's actually the same subtree. Yes, please?
Can we just number them from top to bottom?
That's the solution. Exactly. 100 points. So the idea is, in order to circumvent that problem, is to give names to the leaves. Or, the other possibility would be to come up with numbers for the whole system. But yeah, for purposes of being able to express quite graphically, or at least helpful for our specification afterwards, we will just rename the leaves. But yeah, numbering is the solution. So, for example, that was the syntax tree before, and we will now transform it by numbering all the leaves in such a system, and the sub-expressions will be the inner nodes will be named with the sub-expressions that they actually denote. Okay, so let's start with the formal specification of what we will actually be doing. So for the automaton that we are after, we will have certain states, and the states will we will use will be called first the marker, if we still have to use that sub-expression, and then the actual sub-expression that we are going to talk about. And the other kind of states that we are going to use are the ones that we have actually used, that is the state for sub-expression R and the marker afterwards. And the R's are just nodes of the syntax tree of regular expression E, or sub-expressions of the expression E. That's a kind of correlated now. So the start state for our new Barisethi automaton will then be the state that marks the complete regular expression as still to be used for matching. And the final state will be the one that has the marker afterwards, so the whole expression is then done for. Yeah, and then the only thing that still needs to be defined for an automaton are the transitions. And we've talked about the different transitions that occur, and we have transitions that are occurring at the leaves of the syntax tree belonging to an expression. And yeah, those transitions will of the automaton will then be of that form. We will connect the state that marks a certain leaf as still to be used with the state that marks the leaf as being used when we consume exactly the input symbol that is actually specified with this sub-expression. So for each of the leaves that has an alphabet character, we introduce such a transition. So, and now that that we have that, we have all the transitions that have as labels something different than the epsilon, than the empty string. That's kind of fast. Now, all the transitions that we still need are transitions for the inner nodes. And as we want to have a generic scheme for creating such an automaton, we now need to specify them according to the kind of node that we have there, which is actually only depending on the operator for this sub-expression. So let's have a look at all the all the trees that we use for operators. So let's begin probably with the case that the current subtree R is actually labeled with pipe and has a regular expression R1 and a regular expression R2 over there. And we will have markers here, 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 and here. So there now need to be transitions between these states that mimic the way that paths can be taken when we encounter such a subtree. So what are valid paths in there? Well, we can read them off the specification. So, for example, we will have a transition from the root to the left part. So that we might read the left branch at some point. Of course, there's also an edge to the right part because we have an OR expression here, which alternates between both branches equally. So we might also connect over there. And we also need to consider what are valid transitions whenever we have successfully matched one subtree. For example, when we come back from subtree R1, well, we just go to the successful state for our root. And same thing we do for R2. So that is one of the components that we need for the whole thing. Okay. Questions for this one? Yes, please.
What does that I inside the rectangle stand for?
That was our number that we used in order to make the whole thing unique. It's just a naming thing. Okay. So, next one. Now we have, as an expression, the concatenation. So this will be a subtree of that form. We will have markers, not to confuse with the actual operator. And then we will connect. And in this case, it's pretty easy. For the concatenation, we will have to use both of the branches. So we will start with the left one. We will end when we have finished with the second one. And we have to switch from the left one to the right one when we have finished with the left one. So these are the connections that are used for that subtree. Okay. Yeah. That's something you can also read from here. You have the initial transition, the finishing transition, and the intermediate transition over here. Good. So, next one. Next one is one that has only two partners. That is the star. It has only one child. We have the markers like this. So, what are valid connections in between? So, there's, of course, there's the one that actually uses its sub-expression. It goes down there. Then there's the one that comes back up when the sub-expression has been successfully matched. This is this one. And then there's just two of them left. One is the one that's actually talking about the repetitive character of this operator. This means that when we have finished with R1, we can choose to once again connect to the beginning of R1. And also there's one for just ignoring the child. So this one. Okay. Good. Oh, yeah. Then there's still this question mark operator, but that is one that I consider as just a composition of the ones that we already have. So I would leave them for you at home or for practice purposes, so we won't do them here. Good. Okay. So that is everything that you need for creating a whole automaton that mimics the or has the same semantics as the regular expression. However, it still does not deliver the promises that I gave you right at the start. And that's because we have a lot of navigation during the paths that are taken within such a syntax tree. And all these navigational transitions are epsilon ones, which I promised you to get rid of. And, of course, the whole automaton is highly non-deterministic, which is always a bad idea for implementation. So, what can we do there? And actually, there is a few tricks to come up with a more sophisticated version of the whole automaton by avoiding to create these navigational edges or navigational transitions. That is the actual algorithmic idea that Glushkov or Berry and Sethi had. So the idea would be to pre-compute helper attributes during one or several depth-first searches through the syntax tree. And with the help of these attributes, we then are able to directly create all the transitions that are necessary without actually creating the epsilon transitions. The idea would be to kind of merge all the transitions, all the epsilon transitions that are right now still in the tree, and merge them with the first consuming transition that is directly connected after all these epsilon transitions, and simply drop the particular smaller transitions. So, what do we need as helper attributes for that? Well, first of all, when we started the whole algorithm, we had a lot of navigation to do to just reach the very first leaf. So, one of the helpers that we probably need would be we could pre-compute all the leaves that we can reach at first during the matching of one of the subtrees. That's the first helper thing. So we will compute the first states. And of course, in order to not to use a lot of epsilon transitions to go back up through the tree and come down at another branch, we would need for each of the leaves, we would need to know about other leaves that can be reached next, which means to the right of my particular subtree at the moment. So this would be the attribute next. Yeah, and in order to imagine that we have already matched successfully one of the inputs, we still need to navigate our way up in order to decide whether this is actually an input that we consider as being a valid input for my automaton or not. We still have to do some work, and this this needs a few epsilon transitions, but doesn't end in a reading transition because we end at the very topmost root. So, in order to decide whether we successfully accept one of the words or not, we need to kind of tag a few of the states as possible end states of my automaton, and therefore we should probably do a few computations And this will be called the last. An attribute will be called last. These are all the states that we consider as valid last states in our automaton. Yeah, and in order to compute all of those, we will also need a kind of intermediary helper, which will be the empty attribute, and the empty attribute is the one that tells us whether the subtree that we are looking at right now actually is actually able to be used without matching any input. Kind of matching the empty input. So empty is one of the properties. Why we will actually use one of, why we will actually need one of them, we will see during the construction that follows now. Okay, so these are helper attributes that we're gonna pre-compute now. And yeah, so any questions so far? Okay. So let's start with the easiest of them, which is happens to be the empty attribute. So just to repeat the semantics of what the attribute empty for node means. It means empty is true if and only if the empty string is actually a valid input for the sub-expression R. Just in formulas. Okay, so let's try to compute them. The tool that we can use for the, for this is a depth-first search. So you should think in depth-first search, meaning that there's an algorithm running and it goes to the top like this. Unfortunately, that's something that we can only see when we're here. The people at home will just see the whole line popping up, but in principle that is the way that the depth first search is actually traversing the whole tree. And now we should think of a way to interrupt this run whenever we have found out something about emptiness or this empty attribute for the whole system. So, which would be the first thing that we can say about any subtree in there? Yes, please.
Yes, maybe we can mark the subtree of the star, because every time we see a star, the star can also accept nothing. And yes, the other expressions, concatenation, and yes, the choice operator, they have to accept at least one character if there's no star in there.
So, there's a lot of things in there that work together. So you've already puzzled together a lot of the aspects that are necessary. So, so the first thing that I heard from that is that you can already for the star operator you can say a definite thing, and that is that matching with some expression that is composed of the star operator always is definitely able to match an empty string. So for this one, we can definitely say empty is true. One thing. The others I would put back a little bit. There's also other nodes that we have not really talked about right now, which are pretty easy to determine. These are the these ones. So for the leaves, we can just look at the labels, whether they are leaves that have to be marked as maybe empty or definitely not empty. So all the ones that don't have an epsilon inside are actually ones that will definitely always match with something larger than empty string. So these will be definitely false. And all of the nodes that we have used as leaves so far actually carry a valid character from our alphabet and not epsilon. So all of them will be false. So these are the ones that we can read off immediately, together with the star one that we have seen. And now the other ones, you've said that you have to be aware of whether their children have certain values. Yeah, that's right. And the idea would be to come up with a kind of divide and conquer mechanism to locally decide whether these other operators or operator expressions here actually are able to match with the empty string. And what you do there is for the alternating expression, this pipe here, let me just fill in all these things. The alternating operator, for example, needs to look at both of the children, and especially at the helper attribute that we have computed for the children so far, which is for both of them false. So for the for this instance of the of the pipe operator, we have both of the options definitely not matching with the empty string. So for this one, we will be definitely saying no. This will never match with empty string. And we can continue so on with the other expressions. For this one, we will get the same. For the concatenation operator, well, yes, please. Correct. So that is the actual rule. So we can fill them all in now. There's the true, which is kind of a constant in the whole system. That's what you already said. And for them, this one already is false, so this one is also false. And you see, all in all, it was a computation that we could do coming from the very bottom of the tree. Which means that when we go through the whole tree with such a depth-first search, we will first go down to the children, and then coming back up again, we will fill in all these attributes, which is a scheme for the depth-first search that we call post-order. So post-order visiting all the nodes of the DFS, we will be able to compute all the attributes for this empty attributes for this tree, and that is the generic scheme that we will be using. Why is it the second step? Isn't it? Should be the first step. Okay, that is mistake here. Okay, so the idea would be to, while doing our depth-first search, we will visit all the nodes in post-order, and depending on the kind of nodes, we will perform certain operations. For the leaves, we will do just a basic check whether the label for the leaf is actually the empty string, and if not, we can just set the empty attribute to false. If so, true. Then there are the composed nodes, the ones that carry actual operators, and for them we will give computation rules, a kind of a rule system, how to compute the values for the attributes, and yeah, in particular, we will have for the whenever we encounter the star operator, we will directly set the attribute to true. Whenever we encounter the alternating operator, the pipe, we will take as value for our empty attribute the or of the empty attributes of the both subtrees. And likewise, for the concatenation operator, we will take the ended version of the empty attribute for R1 and R2. So these are generic rules that we can apply. We have to apply them during DFS post order, and we will end up with attributes attached to each of these nodes that tell us whether this subtree is actually able to match the empty string. So far, questions for this approach? Well, I think it should be quite an easy exercise to implement such a system. So, second step. Let's continue. We still have a few other attributes to go. So now we want to tackle the one of the more complex ones, which is the attribute that is simply called first, but is actually, if you are interested in what it really means, this the may set of the first reached read states for this subtree. So, what does that mean? If we start from a state that is marked at the left side, at a subtree that is marked on the left side, we will then go through the epsilon closure of our transition relation, and whenever we reach an actual branch of an actual leaf of our automaton, we will take the identifier for that leaf in this set. So that is colloquially said, that's all the leaves that you can reach from a certain root of this subtree. Okay, so let's do that in an example. So, once again, we need some kind of start for the whole system. Which are leaves or nodes or components of the whole system which we can annotate easily. So the task is find a subtree in there for which we can easily say which the first reached read states are. Yes?
For concatenations, the right subtree cannot be the first.
So, already thinking in complex ones that are depending on children, but. Wrong one. So, concatenation, you say. What was the exact semantics?
The right subtree of a concatenation cannot be in the first reach of the read states.
Sure.
Okay.
You've seen the contra example? Yeah, so it's something that's actually a little bit complicated, but yeah, there's a cross-dependency between the attributes there. In order to evaluate the rule for the concatenation node, you need to take into account whether your left hand child actually is able to match the empty tree, because if it matches the empty tree, you will have to consider the right hand branch also for their first sets. Mm-hmm. But if it is false, which are the first sets then? It's the first sets of the left branch. But yeah, so you can like on the on this on the phase before, you can define rules locally for each node type, and it's, the ones for the concatenation are rules that are actually formulated in a way that the parent node's attribute is depending on the children's attributes. So it's kind of probably going the same way as it did before. It's probably starting with attributes for the children and then going up, computing all the attributes at the top. Although at least we hope so. So how about the first sets for leaves? For example, these ones. It's actually not so difficult anymore, because it's the subtree is just the node itself, and the leaf, the first leaf a leaf will reach is itself. So we can just annotate all the leaves with its with their first sets being their own labels. So that's not so difficult. Then we continue with the more complex ones. You've already decoded what the concatenation is about, but unluckily we now, when we still do our depth first search and go through the whole system in post order, we will next have to deal with these alternations. So any idea what the first sets for alternations might be? Yes, please. Exactly, because you can visit either one. You have both options, and so you will just unify their sets. So in both cases, we will have unions 0, 1, and 3, 4. And now we can start with your concept for concatenation, which, well, let's apply it to this one. What would be the first set? So it will be just two. So we will be just ignoring this one. Okay. So that actually, I've also prepared on the slide the first set for this one. So what can we say for the first set of the star? Well, that's just the children. We can just copy the children over there. So that's what we end up with. And now it's, once again, the concatenation that we still need to solve, and we already have the rule for that. But now we have the situation where we have the emptiness of the left-hand branch. So we also have to take account the first set of the right-hand side, and we will come up with a first set 0, 1, 2 for our root. Okay, so we have a system for computing that. We can make that more formally suited for DFS. And yeah, that's how what we end up. Once again, we have a system that is computed from bottom to top, which coincides with depth first traversal in post order. And once again, we have as our simple entities, we have the leaves. And for the leaves, we decide their first sets by just looking at the labels. When the label is the empty string, we will set the first as if it is the empty string, we won't have anything in the first set. And if it is labeled with something, then we will take its identifier in the first set. Okay, and then we have all the rules. especially the simple ones, like the star. For the star, we just copy the first set from the child, from the question mark. That's not behaving any different to the star. It's just copying the first set from the child. Then the next simplest is the one for alternation, for the option. And in this case, we just have to unify the first sets for both branches. And now is the complex one. That's the one with which we have started. That's the one for concatenation. And in this case, we will have a simple case. It's just copying the left-hand branch in case that the left-hand branch never reads empty. But in case it does, that is the case over here, we will act like the alternation, which means that we have to unify both of those. Okay. I hope that's clear. Nice. Very well. So, let's go over to the third step. This one is, again, a little bit complicated to come up with words for. So, once again, we have a maze set. That means a set of all of states that we may reach. And this time we are interested not in states that we may reach at first when we're going into the sub-expression, but now we're interested in states that we may visit after we have matched the particular subtree. So, in more precise language, which is this one here, that's the definition of what the next set for a particular subtree R is actually meaning. That means, once again, looking at the closure of our epsilon, the epsilon closure of our transitions, connecting the state which we have marked as matched with the first with the first leaf, and for these leaves we take their identifiers into our next set. That's what the definition means. Okay, so let's once again go through our system. Are there any low-hanging fruits? Easy to decide next sets. You have to think in terms of corner cases here. Ah, there's one. Keep in mind that when we talk about the next set for such a subtree, we will be actually considering that the subtree is already visited. So when we have already finished with a alternating thing, we won't look at the spanned tree anymore, but two other siblings of the same parent. So it doesn't matter anymore whether we have visited both of them. But while thinking about the whole thing, we see that that we have already met one difference of this attribute or the way that we have to think about that attribute to the attributes that we had before. Before, we were thinking of relations for a node independence of its children. But this time, for the next node, the children are pretty much irrelevant for the computation for a simple node, but it is more the other siblings that are in the same node that we have to think of. And in this case, probably the corner cases are not the leaves anymore, but something other than that. So it would be nodes that don't have any other siblings with the same parent. Thinking of a tree, the most obvious one that does not have any sibling probably also hasn't any parent. Doesn't have any parent. So we might we might start thinking at the node, for example. Hope there's no objections for that. So for the node, we can definitely say that there's no other sibling that has the same parent. So for the root node, we will have the empty set for a next set. And same is probably also for the node's right-hand child. So this one probably also has no next thing, at least if it is a concatenation thing. Then we can go down even more to this side, where we will see, well, after this sub-expression, there's no next. So probably this one will also have the empty set as next. And we can even go down to the children of this node, which is these two. And also these two will probably be the last ones that will ever be matched in this kind of syntax tree. So for these, we will always have the empty set as next ones. Okay, so what's still missing? We still need to think about computing, for example, the next set for this one here. Yeah, there's still... yeah?
Is it three and four?
Three and four is the proposition? Mm-hmm. So, kind of locally, if you just look at this thing, how could you... You want to help?
The first set of the sibling.
So we already have determined for the other sibling all the states that come at the very beginning when we visit this one. So this is the first set of the right sibling. So for concatenation, we have a look at the right sibling and take it as the next set for the left sibling. Okay, that's nice. So, okay, I've already done the same thing for the other side because we have another concatenation subtree here, and once again, we just took the first set for the right branch and took it as next set for the left branch. Now, for the siblings of the star subtree, why that? Why is that?
Yeah, because we can just restart from the start.
Exactly. We can repeat the matching for the whole subtree and as well consider that we might take the exit and go over. So we just unify. So we have 0, 1, and 2. And for the children of alternation, well, we just copy from the root. Okay. So let's have a look at the rule set. This time we have computed our attributes not emanating from the bottom but from the top. So that is something that we can also do with depth first search, but in this case we would have to go to pre-order traversal instead of post-order traversal. And also we are referring to attributes that have been computed with, of course, depth first search in post-order, which is the empty and the first. So these need to have been determined before. But if we have that, we can come up with very easy ones, especially with the root. From the root, we can determine the next attribute as being empty. So there's no set of the set of next reachable states is empty. Apart from that, we can determine these sets depending on, of course, the value of the parent, especially for alternation. So let's have a look at alternation. For alternation, we just copy the next set of the parent into the children. That's what we have done so far already. Then, another simple one, or at least intermediate one, is the one that we have for the repetition for our clean star. As we have said already, we might go down to the sub expression once again after having visited the sub expression, so we might to consider our own firsts, but also we have to consider the states that can be reached from the whole sub expression, from the whole repetition sub expression, which is given to us by this that first pre-order computation, and can be obtained by accessing the next attribute for the parent identifier. Yeah, for the question mark operator, that's kind of the more easy version of the repetition operator, because it simply cannot repeat it. The only thing when we have finished with R1, the only thing where we can go to is the next one, next from the parent. So we just copy in this case. Then there's the complex one, which is the concatenation. And for the concatenation, we have an easy part, which is the right-hand side branch. For the right-hand side branch, we just copy from the parent node. But for the left-hand side branch, it is actually a little bit more complicated. There's a possibility where we just can assume that we take our right-hand side siblings' first set as the next reachable nodes. But we can do so solely with that first set only if the right-hand side is actually not is actually definitely never empty. So we need the empty attribute to be false for this case. In case that our right-hand side sibling actually is able or may actually match the empty string, we should take care. And in, additionally to the first set of our right-hand side sibling, we also need to consider the next reachable set of my parent. So that is what the concatenation is all about. All in all, now we have a rule set for computing the next attribute. This time we will have rules for computing the children's attributes in dependence of first, of course, their parents' sets, but also the attributes that have been or must have been computed beforehand for their right-hand side siblings. And yeah, this is also about the right-hand side sibling. Yeah, so that's kind of inter-attribute dependencies here. Okay, so this has been third phase in our Berusethi algorithm. Now, there's still one thing missing, and this is the may set of states that are reached before we accept, before we kind of take a path back up to the root of the whole tree that we are looking at right now. So, yeah, once again, the specification. This time you'll see that the expression that we are talking about is actually now going in as the destination of our epsilon closure to transition, and what we're taking in is the identifiers of leaves that can be connected to my finally accepting state, and we unify them in this last set. So now that we've seen the two possibilities that we can have as computations with this depth-first search, we have two candidates for low-hanging fruit, for easily determinable attributes. So there's either the root node or the leaves for which we can quite easily say which the last reachable states actually are. So any ideas for that? It's actually the same problem as the first reachable states, just the other way around. So it's probably quite closely related to the first attribute computation. So actually the ones that are easy tasks are the ones for the leaves. So we start with their own labels as values, and we can go on computing them kind of similarly than we did for the first sets. So I will go through them quite quickly and not waste too much time on that. You can try to come up with the parts yourself but when you repeat the whole things. So we come up with just the rules for the whole things. There's the easy ones. The last sets for the leaves are the easy ones, and they're just consisting in their own label. So singleton sets, once again. And apart from that, we can compute all the other parts with easy rules. It's quite similar to the ones for the first sets. So we have just a copying of the sets from the children of question mark and clean star. We unify the last sets of both children of the alternative operator. So that's the same thing as the first implementation, and then we have a kind of flipped version of the implementation for the concatenation, like that. And in this case, we will take for the last set of a composition, we will take the last set of its right hand side child, only if the right-hand side is not definitely not matching the empty string. And in case it actually matches the empty string, we will unify the last sets of both children. Okay. Good. Any questions so far? Well, we might, for example, wonder what to do with all these attributes now that we've computed them. So the task is now, now that we have all these attributes present for all the sub-expressions of my syntax tree of a regular expression, what can we do with that? And the idea is to create the sophisticated version of the Barry-Sethi automaton, which now should actually keep to the promises that I've given you before. Namely, it won't have any epsilon transitions anymore. And that's that is because by construction we never actually use an epsilon as a label in here. So what is the states of the whole thing? Now we have only very limited amount of states anymore because all the states that we used so far are leaves. All the other ones we will just try to come up with constructions that circumvent them. Also, we need a kind of global state from which we start. This will be just this one. Okay, the start state is our arbitrary state. The final states will be the ones that we have computed in our last phase, namely the last set of the whole regular expression. At least in case that my whole regular expression never matches or definitely does not match the empty string. In case it does, we might just start with our automaton and immediately accept. In this case, we have to take our start state into the set of final states. So that's kind of the corner case. And now all the transitions that remain have to do with the other attributes that we have computed. At first, we need some transitions to start our automaton from our start state, and these are the ones that can be initially reached from our root node. So we have to consider the first set of our whole expression. We can just read that off from our root node and then connect our start state with all the accepting states for all the identifiers that we find within this first attribute for the root node. So these are transitions that are not non-empty very well. Then, all that remains is connecting our initially visited leaves with all the ones that can come after them. And conveniently, we have already computed the corresponding sets for each of these nodes via this third phase, which was the next computation. So all we have to do now is for each of the leaves, we have to create transitions to those leaf states that we can find within the next set that belongs to that leaf, and then create this transition with the label that actually belongs to the target state. So these are all the things that we need. Yeah. We have established the links from the start state to each of the first reads with the ones with the transitions from here. We have introduced the intermediate transitions with these here, and we have marked all of the leaves that that were in the last set of the whole automaton as final states. So that's all we need. No epsilon transitions anymore. All the transitions that we see are actual labels of leaves. Okay, questions for that? Okay, so all you need to do for this kind of generation is you need to implement depth-first searches. You just have to act once when you come back up from all the children, and the other way around, you have to act when you descend before you descend into a subtree of a node. So that's all you need to do for that. You need to implement these depth-first searches, and then you can compute all these attributes, and with them you can just assemble your automaton. Okay, so that's the Barisetti automaton. For our example, it looks like this. So that's quite a nice automaton. It doesn't have any epsilon transitions anymore. However, that's probably not the thing that we had in mind. It still looks a little bit complicated, and considering that it is a regular expression is pretty easy, by hand we might have come up with something different, namely this one. That is an automaton that does exactly the same, is also non-deterministic like the other one, and is even more compact than the one that we have generated via Barisetti. However, you still have to keep in mind that for that kind of automaton, you would now need to apply some kind of automaton minimization techniques and any other pre-processing things. Still, for an automaton like the one you see here, you can be sure that the guarantees of the automaton construction still applies, meaning that we still have an upper bound, or in this case, an exact number of states that we can rely on to be generated for that kind of automaton. So that's something that we have seen on the definitions before, and this is having exactly n plus 1 nodes with n being the number of alphabet characters that have been part of the regular expressions. So that is something that is already pretty small in terms of number of states. Why is that so important? Well, that's what we're going to talk about right now. That's how we can turn the NFAs that we get out of our construction deterministic. That is a chapter that should be fairly similar to things that you have already heard in the beginners lectures. This is something that you've probably learned as being the power set construction. It is something that has been considered so obvious by automaton people that they just didn't connect any special name for the kind of construction. So now we have the power set construction. So what is all that about? Let's have an example. For the power set construction, we kind of track with our newly constructed automaton all the possibilities of states that we can reach within the non-deterministic automaton. So we kind of group automata states from the non-deterministic automaton to be a new power set state of our deterministic automaton. Okay, so what we are going to see right now is the non-deterministic automaton up there. and this, it will be converted into a deterministic automaton down here. So let's try that. So from the tactics is the following. You start to think of what can happen if you take your current state, and if you go with an input symbol like A. So let's take this kind of anonymous state here as our initial state and say, what are the actual states that are reachable in the non-deterministic automaton if you just go A from the start? So what do I take as my power set state? Yes, please?
0 and 2.
0 and 2. Why is that? Well, you have to check. A is occurring twice in this case, so we will have 0 and 2. Okay. So our new state that we keep here is a power set state. It has several of the old identifiers in there, which is 0 and 2. Same thing you do for B. What do we have for B? Yes, please?
Just one.
Okay, which one? Okay, so that should be correct, I think. Okay, I've started like this. Yeah, I've done a little bit more like that, but you get the principal concept. You have a look at the original non-deterministic automaton and just trace which of the states you can actually reach with your input at the moment, and put in the states in our power set label, and that's what we end up with, a new state. And yeah, if you continue from that, you might wonder what is happening right here if I go with A. Well, for this case, you have to go in the original drawing and look up 0 and 2 and check what you can actually reach via A, which is this one, and this one. So you will end up with another power set state, and this time, well, it will have even more values inside, so it will have 0, 2, and 3, and so on. So you will go through your whole automaton. You have to try for each of the states that you have so far generated, try what are possible reachable states when going through an edge. Well, this one we have already checked, so this one is not valid anymore, so we should go with B. And for this one, we have A and B already, so we are done with this one. For this one, we have not gone B, so there's something happening here. So let's generate it to the very end. So that's the automaton that you get out of that. Okay, so that looks pretty nice and clean, and that's a desirable automaton for us. However, I know. Let's at first come to the first theorem. What we have achieved by that is we have a construction with which we can come up with a deterministic automaton. You have seen that there's no double labels anymore. There's no epsilons because we didn't have an epsilon in the beginning. So we have a way for coming up with a deterministic automaton PA, which is the power set automaton of A. And it has the same input language as the old one. The construction is the one that we have seen. We kind of have have transitions that are taken from the old transition function, and they are applied to a whole set of states of the old automaton, and they yield states that are then unified in order to come up with a set of states of the old automaton that we call now the power set state for our newly introduced power set automaton. So that's the power set construction. very nice, but now's the but. The power set is already something that should make you a little bit dubious of the whole system, because power set is always something that is exponential in the number of basic elements that you put in there. And that also makes the arity of the number of elements of such a power set exponentially as large as the number of elements of the original set. So an exponential algorithm for our case, well, that's something that's not so nice. You might be optimistic and say, well, I know that there's exponentially many combinations of original non-deterministic states that I can do, but anyway, there might be a lot of them which are actually not reachable from the starting state. So what I could do is I could only try to construct them or add them by need, in case that I start from my start state, I just generate the ones that are actually contributing to reachable states of the final automaton. So that actually takes away a lot of combinations for you. But still, if you have a very if you have a starting non-deterministic automaton that is not well behaving for that system, you still get a large number of automata states. So that's something that is actually not really done in practice. So what's actually done in practice is something different. Grep, for example, is a Unix tool for using regular expressions in order to search through text files. And that's something that is developed throughout decades, and it has been optimized quite a lot, and they obviously have the same problem as we have here. And what they do is they don't really ever construct the whole deterministic automaton from the non-deterministic automaton, but what they do is they only compute the fraction of the automaton that is actually necessary in order to process the current input file. What can I think of that? Well, it's a kind of construction by need, and it's not an exhaustive construction. So what we do, for example, with the automaton that we already know, and this input example is, well, we just use the inputs that we find here from all our states and just construct those transitions that are actually needed for this input. So let's do that, for example. We start with initial state and start with A. With A we can go over here to 0 and 2. For 0 and 2 we will now have to check B. So we have reached this one here. And now we have to go B. This is this one. Now we are here. We have to go once again A. This will go over here. Now we are here. We still have to go B, but B is now something that we already have seen. So we don't have to generate a new node for that. We just have to mark this new state 1.4 as the one that we have that we're currently in. And yeah, now we have worked on our input, and we have only created 3 nodes so far instead of our whole automaton. And that way we can make sure that we will only generate maximally as many states as we will have input symbols at worst. And since we have to do as many steps as we have input symbols anyway, this is something that doesn't hurt us. So what's actually done is that although non-deterministic automata are quite bad for direct implementation, we never construct the deterministic automaton anyway, because all we need is for one run, we only need a fraction of this deterministic automaton that we can just create on the go. Okay, so that is what we're going to do. Yes, please. Well, as we keep track of how do we determine which are the final ones? Well, as soon as there is one state in the non-deterministic automaton that is actually final, we will also have the same state marked in our final automaton when it has actually one of the old final states as its power set content.
Does that not that leads to the possibility that you have a new end state where a shorter word is now legal?
Well, we have to keep in mind the non-deterministic characteristic of the whole thing. Each of the numbers that you see here are numbers that you can reach on one of the possible paths through the non-deterministic automaton. And it suffices for only one of them to accept in order for the word to be accepted by the original automaton. So that's already enough. But, valid remark here. Okay. Yeah, so there's a little bit of implementation details. You have to use a hash table for the whole thing, and you have to check this hash table before for the case whether you have already generated this state before, and then you don't create a new one but take the old one. But that's implementation details that should not bother you us too much here. So in the end, what we have is we, for each regular expression, we have a way to compute a deterministic automaton. But don't tell anyone. In practice, we don't do so. We just use the non-deterministic version, and that's already sufficient for us. So next time, we will continue with actual scanner design. I thank you for your attention and hope you have a good week. Have fun in the tutorials. Goodbye.